on. Okay.
Yeah, okay, we're all set. It's working. Okay. We're fine. We're working.
Okay, today is March 3rd, and this is Eileen Barker. I'm interviewing Dr. Thomas Scully. And we're at Dr. Scully's home on Ferris Lane, 1400 Ferris Lane in Reno. Dr. Scully, let's start by, we might as well start with the obvious. Tell me about where you were born.
Okay.
Your date of birth.
All right. November 14, 1932. I was born in Jamaica, New York. My family at the time actually were living in Poughkeepsie, but my mother, I was the seventh child, my mother went back to her obstetrician in Jamaica, which to the Mary Immaculate Hospital where I was born. That's very close to the LaGuardia Airport now. At any rate, that's where I was born, and they were living in Poughkeepsie. Shortly thereafter, we moved to New Rochelle, so really I was raised in New Rochelle. I think we moved to New Rochelle, New York, when I was about 3 years old.
Where's Jamaica?
Jamaica is on Long Island, but it's part of New York City now. It's actually part of Brooklyn, I guess. I don't know the exact technicalities, but it's Jamaica, Queens. It's part of the borough of Queens, yeah. Which is part of, not Brooklyn, but Queens. It's part of New York City now.
And your mother's name and father's name?
My father was James Aylward. That's a family name, A-Y-L-W-A-R-D. It's an Irish name. He was James Aylward Scully, born in 1892 in Saugerties, New York, which is north of West Point. My mother was Evangeline Marie Temple. She was born in 1897, and she was born in Sparta, Illinois, which is in southern Illinois, south of St. Louis across the river. So the two of them met. It's kind of an interesting story, actually.
How did they meet?
My father was a traveling salesman. He was working for an automobile parts company. He was a jobber, they call him. He'd go around and take orders for automotive parts. And this was 1921. He was 29 years of age, had not been married, apparently, according to my mother and others. He had lots of girlfriends, but finally he was on a trip to Dallas, and he stopped on the train in Kansas City and had a layover for the weekend. And a friend of his was going to fix him up with a date, and he went to the Muehlbach Hotel expecting to meet this blind date, and introduced himself to my mother, who was there visiting a friend of hers from nursing school, and she was not the blind date at all. He did find the woman he was supposed to have the date with and went out. But he saw my mother, and so the next day he came back, the next morning came back to the hotel and waited for her to come down for breakfast and introduce himself. She was had just been out of nursing school, had been visiting a friend of hers from St. Louis, who lived in Kansas City, I should say. Said he'd like to visit her when he got to St. Louis on his way back, and apparently she said yes. So on his way to Dallas that night on the train, he wrote his first love letter to my mother. I have a copy of it, in which it's written on the stationery for the Muehlbach Hotel, and says he couldn't sleep all the way to Dallas, probably thinking about something. I've forgotten the exact phrases. Little girl from St. Louis. Anyway, he came back on his way back to New York, stopped off in St. Louis, called her, met her, went on the rest of his trip, came back about 4 weeks later and asked her to marry him, and they were married in 6 weeks from the time they met. 6 weeks. To the chagrin of their family, because he was Irish Catholic from New York and she was a Presbyterian. And she said yes, took a hell of a chance, I guess. She said yes, no member of her family would come to their wedding. They were married in St. John the Evangelist Church in the basement in St. Louis at night. And the witnesses was the janitor of the church.
Was that a Catholic church?
Yeah, St. John the Evangelist, downtown St. Louis, it's still there. The janitor of the church was the stand-in for my father, and my mother had a stand-in, one of her landlady of a little apartment she lived in St. Louis. Her roommate wouldn't come to the wedding. The mother and father, no one would come to the wedding. For a a Scotch-Irish Presbyterian farmer's daughter from Southern Illinois to marry a
traveling salesman.
Irish Catholic. But as it turned out, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, who was alive at the time, said to my grandfather, you should not allow that girl to leave St. Louis without at least meeting her husband. So they invited them to a Sunday dinner.
Your paternal, this is the paternal side?
My mother's grandfather.
Oh, your maternal side, right. Okay. So
invited them to Sunday dinner, and they met and they talked, and apparently they were civil. She got on the train and went to New York with him. Never looked back. Through the years, her mother and father reconciled with her and my father, became fast friends. They would visit back and forth. They got along very, very well. But on the day of the wedding, that picture I showed you out there, no member of her family came. So she went to New York, and where he then had his business, up and down the Hudson Valley, Poughkeepsie I mentioned. They lived in Buffalo for a while. They lived in Long Island, in Baldwin. They lived in several different places.
And what was his full name?
James Aylward Scully. Yeah.
And her family was from the St. Louis area.
They were right. They were.
What was her full name? What was her name?
Evangeline Marie Temple.
And
Sparta, Illinois.
And her father's name.
He was,
You remember?
Yeah, sure. He was Robert Temple, and her name was Rebecca Adair Moore. Rebecca Adair Moore was my grandmother, and she married Robert Temple. And they had four children. My mother was the second oldest of those four children, born in 1897. But she went to New York, this was in 21, and my father died during the war in 44, so they lived together for 23 years, roughly. When he died, they raised seven kids, and then she lived as a widow for another almost 40 years and died here in Reno. She came to live with me for a couple of years and died here in Reno in 83, so she's been dead now 15 years. So she lived as a widow for 40 years. And they've been married 23 years, roughly.
So you had six siblings.
Yeah, I'm the youngest of seven. I have three older sisters, and then three. So there were three girls, and then four boys, and I'm the youngest of the seven. One boy's dead. No. One boy died. He had a hypertension. Died of a stroke in 1963. So he was only just about 30. He was a year older than I. Actually, we went all through school together because he had would been repeated a year in grade school. He had had severe eye problems and had had surgery on his eyes, so he missed a year of school or half a year. So actually, from about the fifth grade on, my brother Vinny, his name was Vincent, he and I went all through school together, and then. He died when I was overseas. He died in 1963. But all the others are alive. My older sisters now.
Could you get? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and they're all. They're all. The others are all alive.
Could you get me the name? Their names. You don't have to tell me now, but.
I've got it all.
Like to? Oh,
all
in your bio.
I've got the whole thing. Who they are, where they're born, when they were
born.
I'd
like to include that.
Okay. I'll give them all to you.
What business was your getting back to your maternal grandparents? What business was he in?
Okay, my grandfather Temple farmed as a young man because they were all farmers in Southern Illinois. They had been there four or five generations, came there actually right after the Louisiana Purchase. Their family settled there in 1810. So they were farmers. He didn't like farming, so he moved into the town of Sparta, where my mother and father, where my mother and her brothers and sisters were raised. It's a little town. And he then became a traveling salesman for John Deere farming equipment.
Oh, yeah.
So he wandered all over the Midwest selling farm equipment. And then he also wandered selling stoves. They were developing, I guess, the old wood stove was going to be developed into coal stove, and eventually they hooked it up with gas. And so he sold stoves. And then later in his life, he lived into his 80s, later in his life, he went back to farming, but he began to raise a quail. He had a big quail farm in central Illinois. And then his last years moved in with my aunt, my mother's younger sister. He and his wife lived in St. Louis in the city during his latter years. And then literally went home to a nursing home in Sparta where he died. He and my grandmother died a few days apart in the same nursing home.
Oh my.
Yeah, a few days apart. I can look up the details, but they were in their 80s. I've got it in here, but they were in their
80s. This gives us an idea.
So that was the Temple family. But all of his ancestors had been living in southern Illinois and in the St. Louis area since the Louisiana Purchase. And most of them, as a matter of fact, really, for a moment, because I've got all this record, the earliest of that family settled in Maryland in 1693, and I have a copy of the land deed they got in 1693. And they moved west they were in Pittsburgh before the Revolutionary War. They were there during Lord Dunsmore's war in 1770. And then moved to Boonesboro, Kentucky with Daniel Boone in 1787. And then the Louisiana Purchase was 1803, and they moved into the St. Louis area. So there were several branches of the family, but they were all pioneers. My mother's family were all early American settlers in Maryland and North Carolina and Pennsylvania. One of her ancestors is buried in Christ Church in Boston, and there's a plaque there with his John Temple, the plaque on the wall there with a pew in that church there in Boston. So they were early American settlers. My father's family were Irish. They came in the mid-1800s. So that's my mother's family.
And your father's family then, the Scullys?
They're Scullys.
Tell me about them.
Well, I've traced them back to Tipperary. The earliest I can get documented evidence is 1570. And all of their family were from Tipperary, Cashel, and two little towns called Kilfeekle and Golden, which are right outside of Cashel. The Rock of Cashel, of course, is a famous monument in Ireland, been there since the 7th century, and St. Patrick was presumably taught there, and the famous Irish king, Boran Beru, was his castle. At any rate, it's now a ruin. And all of my Scully ancestors up to my grandfather are buried there. The family we know the most about, James Scully, had 17 children. One of those sons, the youngest, by the name of William, went to Edinburgh, got his Doctor of Medicine degree from Edinburgh in 1802.
Would this be your uncle?
That would
uncle?
Be my great-great-grandfather, William Scully. He graduated from Edinburgh, but because he had married, quote, a daughter of a widow with no means, he was disowned by his father. His father left him, who was a very wealthy man. This James Scully had was very wealthy. Left him something like £50 a year. Anyway, he never went back to Ireland. He left Edinburgh, went to southern England, to the town of Torquay in Devon. It's on the southwest coast of England, very close to Plymouth and Portsmouth and that. And Torquay has become very famous of late because that's where Agatha Christie was born and raised and wrote all of her stories. Anyway, he practiced medicine there.
My heroine.
Yeah, practiced medicine in Torquay from 1802 to 1842, where he died. He had a son and two daughters. The son was educated in Ireland. He sent his son back to Ireland at Trinity College in Dublin. He became an engineer, and he came to this country with a wife and a baby. That general out there was his kid, born in 37. They came here in 1842.
Would this have been the first Scully to...
First of my family's Scullies. There probably were other Scullies, but...
To emigrate?
This was the first one of any of my family, from the Tipperary Scullies. Mm-hmm. Came in 1842 to the area of Honesdale, Pennsylvania, Port Jervis, and surveyed the canal that goes from the Delaware River across the southern tier of New York to Kingston. And they built a canal. Of course, the Irish built the canals of this country. The Erie Canal was started in 1822 and was finished by then, but they were building this canal to take coal from the coal fields of northern eastern Pennsylvania, bring them across on the canal boats to the Hudson River and then down into New York. That avoided the necessity of putting it on ships, going down the Delaware River, out into the ocean, a treacherous journey, up the Jersey coast, in through the Straits of Verrazano, and into the New York Harbor. So he surveyed that.
The name of the canal was what?
It's called the Honesdale-Rondout Canal. It's called the Delaware and Hudson Canal. Honesdale was the town in Pennsylvania. Rondout was the little town on the Hudson River just south of Kingston, north of West Point. But it's in all the literature I have, it's called the Delaware and Hudson Canal. It was used to transport coal from Pennsylvania to New York City by that route, because it was cheapest and the fastest, from about 1840 to about 1875 or 80, and of course after the Civil War, the railroads put all the canals out of business. But he was there for a few years. Then he went to Alabama, to Muscle Shoals, where he did surveying for the canal that goes around Muscle Shoals to allow boats to go up the Tennessee River, past the shoals to Chattanooga. Then he went from there in 1852 to Nashville, where the Harpeth River has shoals that enter into the Cumberland River. And I've been to all these places. And he surveyed canals there. They were bypassing all these shoals with canals so that the boats could come up the river, and they wanted to get the Mississippi River boats up the Cumberland River to Nashville. Well, he died there, and his wife died there in 1857 in a cholera epidemic. Now, why my grandfather, as a five-year-old kid, survived that, I can't tell you, but he survived.
How many children did they have?
They had two children.
One of whom was
my grandfather, and his older half-brother. The engineer had two wives. He had a son by the first wife, who made a career out of the Army. He retired in 1900 as a general in the U.S. Army. He'd been in the Army for 40-some-odd years. But he took his younger half-brother, my grandfather, to New York, and where my grandfather was raised by relatives. So he gets to New York in 1857, and he's raised by relatives and assumes their name. So he's raised by a family named Cosby, C-O-S-B-Y, no relation to the comedian. But when he becomes 21, he retakes his own name of Vincent Scully. He has no education. He'd been raised during the Civil War. The Civil War is now over, and he gets a job as a as a common laborer. And then finally he gets a job as a butler, and then spends the next 40-some years as a butler for the Auchincloss family in Newport, Rhode Island. I told you that story earlier there.
This is the one of the, this is Hugh Auchincloss.
Hugh Auchincloss, yes. Yeah. So, and in the winter they'd be in New York, a big fancy house over on the east side, actually not very far from where the Metropolitan Museum is there. Their home was on like East 60-something, I got the address. So my father would spend his winters in New York, and his summers and spring and the early fall would be in Newport. So that picture I showed you out there is my father as a little boy after the death of his mother, being raised in Newport, Rhode Island. And
so his adoptive parents, where were they? What happened to them?
I can't tell you.
The people who raised them, the Cosbys, did you ever know them?
No. Oh, no, my grandfather died before I was born.
Oh, of course, this was your grandfather.
Yeah, we're talking,
yes.
This is 1860,
oh, sure.
1870, right. During the Civil War.
I need to get my...
1860, 1870, here. So I don't know anything about them. I've tried to search through the Mormon Library to find them. I've found a number of Cosby families, but the problem is that if you do any research in the U.S. Census prior to about 1890, they only list the name of the man of the household. They generally, until 1880, don't list the woman or any of the children's name. They just list the number. So in one of those families may have been this young boy, but he wouldn't have been listed by name because they only listed him as, you know, five minor boys or minor children. So I have been unable to find that, and there's nowhere in the oral or written history of my family what happened to these people. We do know that it was New York. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, my grandfather was raised in New York, lived there all of his life, would be in the summer in Newport, and then he retired.
And when did he marry?
He married my grandmother in 1871, and their wedding picture's on that wall out there. Wrong. Yes, I guess it was the middle 1870s, because he had six children, and my father was the youngest of six, and my father was born in 1892. Anyway, he married in the middle 1870s, and they had six children. My grandmother died.
And what was her name?
And her name was Elizabeth Maxwell, Bessie Maxwell, Elizabeth Maxwell. And
your father was the, you said, the youngest of
six? The youngest of six. Youngest of six. And the oldest was a Thomas, for whom I'm named. He died the week I was born, so they named me for him. And then there was, there were two girls, one of whom died as a young girl. And then there was two boys and another girl. So my father was the youngest of six, born in 92.
And were they Catholic?
They were Roman Catholic.
Roman Catholic.
Roman Catholic. As were all the other Scullys. As a matter of fact, my father, James Aylward Scully, was named for his uncle, James Aylward, who was a priest in New York and actually baptized my father. I've got his baptismal record. Anyway, he was raised in New York, and as a matter of fact, lived in a little house, or lived in an apartment house, right behind St. Patrick's Cathedral, where they were raised. And when my father was a little boy, he used to serve Mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral. He was an altar boy at St. Patrick's as a little boy.
So your father did his growing up in New York City?
Did his grow up in New York City and in Hammersmith Farm in Rhode Island in the summers.
Oh, so at this point, your grandfather was the butler, and
oh yes, he
little
been,
children
oh, long before
lived
he,
with the family.
Oh sure, my grandfather was the butler from about 1880 something. I've got that date somewhere, mm-hmm. The early 1880s, to 1920 when he retired. By then he was 70 years old, and the Auchincloshes let him stay in that house. And he stayed in that house, which is now called the Yellow House. It's still there at Hammersmith Farm. Jackie's mother lived there for a number of years, and now Hugh the Third lives there. And I have a letter from him. I sent him the old picture. He had never seen that picture.
Just for clarification, yeah. Jackie, you mean
Jackie Kennedy.
Yeah. Jackie Onassis.
Jackie Kennedy's mother, Janet Bouvier, was Hugh Auchincloshe's, I think, third wife. After Jack's mother and father divorced, Janet Bouvier married Hugh Auchincloshe, and that was sometime in the 30s. I don't really remember when. But so that's why that family picture is shown on Hammersmith Farm. And that house is still there. It's called the Yellow House now. Been there for...
It looked as if it had a thatched... The picture looks almost like a thatched roof. It is not, though, is it?
No. And I can show you a modern picture of it. I was there a few years ago. And it's still occupied. It's a beautiful home. So my father was raised in New York City and raised in... Hammersmith Farm. Well, to finish that story, when my grandmother died in 1898, my father was 6 years old. A few years later, around the turn of the century, my grandfather remarried Mary Riley, who became known as Aunt Mary, and she had been one of the Irish nannies for the Auchincloshes. And so my grandfather, Vincent Scully, and his second wife, Mary Riley, called Aunt Mary, lived on Hammersmith Farm until they died. And they died about 4 or 5 months apart. And my mother was pregnant with me and went to 5 funerals during her pregnancy with me. My grandfather died. My step-grandmother, whatever you call her, died. My Uncle Tom died, for whom I'm named. My Uncle Johnny died. So a whole bunch of my family died in the year 1932 when I was born. So I was named John Thomas. My real name is John Thomas. I didn't know that for years. I always was called Tommy John as a kid. And so I always wrote Thomas John Scully. And only when I joined the Air Force for the first time had to get a birth certificate, and my mother had forgotten, I got a birth certificate, and there it shows me my birth record is John Thomas. So I went to the staff, what they call staff judge advocate or whatever in the Air Force, and just he said, oh, you can change your name, so I just changed my name. So everything I have, all my official things was Thomas John, but literally my birth certificate says John Thomas.
Well, that's an interesting part of the background that we had to get over.
Sure.
Now let's get to John Thomas Scully. Are you, you're not a Jew, no.
No.
You're named after your uncle.
My uncle, the oldest member of my father's family. He was considerably older than my father, actually.
So when your parents married and escaped St. Louis and went
to New
York.
Yeah, left St. Louis, went to New York. Spent the rest of their life in, well, Baltimore, Poughkeepsie, Jamaica, Baldwin, and ended up in New Rochelle where my father died. So they lived in 5 cities in the state of New York during their married life.
And then your mother came here and lived?
No, well, my mother lived in her own apartment for 35 years.
But then ended up coming
came
here?
Came out here, in, right. Came here in 1980, lived with me and Celia for 3 years and died here. Yeah. But she didn't come here till she was 70, gosh, she was 80-something, 81 or 2. So you know, she lived in her own, after my father died, she finished raising us, because I was just 11 at the time. She and my oldest sister was maybe about 11 years old. My oldest sister was 21 or 2 at the time. She raised us alone. And after I was raised, she gave up the house where we were all raised in and moved into an apartment and lived in that apartment for another, I have to figure it out, 30-some years.
How did she get along? You were so young, and she had little children. Was there enough money to...
I'm not sure of all that, because I haven't gotten all that from my older brothers and sisters, who aren't terribly talkative. One of the reasons I bought that tape recorder is so I could talk to my brothers and sisters over the phone. And They're still working, I assume.
Can we tell? I hate to lose any of that.
Well, it's still working.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
When my father must have had some life insurance policies, I don't think he, I don't know what other money she had really. I know she used that money to buy the house we were living in. She saw, I remember she sold her her wedding and engagement ring. She sold the car she had. She then went back to nursing part-time, and she would do special duty nursing. And then my older brothers and sisters all worked. I started working when I was 14. So everybody had jobs and contributed to the household one way or the other. And I'm not sure. And I guess maybe there were no uncles and aunts that were sugar daddies that would give us any money. I think my mother just did a lot of it on her own. She begged, borrowed, and stole, I guess.
My word.
Yeah, but most of it was through, she'd make money nursing, and my father did leave enough money for her to buy the house, so she had that, and taxes weren't very high.
And that house was where?
In New Rochelle.
By then you were in New Rochelle. So
oh, yes, we lived there all our life.
So.